Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. Exciting times. We just had the drop of the Tucker interview with Vladimir Putin 1 hour ago. It's a 2 hour long interview. Tucker Carlson is not engaged much in directing the interview. Vladimir Putin, like a Chad, takes control of the interview. People are starting to comment about it. I think it's a great interview. It's one of these passive interviews sometimes you have to do as an interviewer. It depends on the kind of person you're interviewing. I don't think that a Putin can be guided toward a more productive direction. So he's kind of a David Duke in that sense. You have to let it go and you have to see what he had in store and just more or less guide the public to understanding what he's saying rather than guide him because he's unguidable. So the Vladimir Putin interview, the death knell, some people on social media were calling it the death knell of mainstream media. Yes, I agree. It's a historic moment. Historic because Tucker Carlson just releases it in priority on his TCN, TuckerCarlson.com network. And also puts a copy of it on Twitter. The copy has been there for like 20 or 30 minutes. And it's already at 6 million views, 134K like. It's going to probably be one of the most viewed long video, at least, if not one of the most viewed video across the platform. Asferia says, Tucker should have gotten a haircut. I think both men did a good job. Vladimir Putin did exactly what I had predicted he was going to do, that he was going to copy his approach of his appearance in the Oliver Stone documentary. So a very historical perspective. And people were surprised. Even Tucker was surprised. But I predicted this a week ago. People are saying, F. Is it because there is a glitch on Odyssey? Hopefully we will be back here. I'm seeing the connection appears to be unaffected. And so I would expect us to be back on Odyssey. All right. Okay, it's back, says Gray. Perfect. We are back. Yeah, this is something I expected, that it would go historical, because ultimately it is very much tied with the history of the Russian people and even the modern interpretations of security concerns and being in range of the U.S. missiles. All of these are kind of superficial ways of looking at it. It's a very American way and militaristic way to understand, it's about controlling the space so that the Americans aren't within missile range of Moscow. The fact is that in modern times, you are pretty much in missile range of America, wherever you are on the planet. And a little bit more of Ukraine, less of Ukraine, more of Poland, less of Poland, doesn't change that much. So yes, if there is to be a real justification for the invasion of Ukraine, it is a question of peoples, it is a question of cultures. And even, I would say, Vladimir Putin at the very end makes it a question of religion. Presenting the Americans, that is like the very last question of Tucker. It was a good question to ask on top of it, even if the interview was over, because it gave the opportunity for Putin to talk about the soul of the Russian people bound through orthodoxy. Even if I hate the ortho bros on the internet, I hate these people. They are annoying, all of them. I can respect the orthodox people of reality. They're the real orthodox believers who are in Russia. I don't take issue with them. I do take issue with the internet American ortho bros. Putin says, presents America as basically having tried to divide the Russian people in this war. No, he doesn't present it as a war that he initiated. He presents it as an operation to end the war that was started by Ukraine by attacking those Russian regions, attacking orthodoxy in Ukraine, and attacking the Orthodox Church and the Russian-speaking people. And he makes a beautiful case from historical considerations across the centuries in the first 30 minutes. And then he moves to the oppression of the Russian-speaking people, as I had predicted. And then he ends with, basically, and he doesn't get into the weed with Tucker on who exactly blew the pipeline. And you see that Putin ultimately doesn't care. And he's like, oh, yeah, it's the Americans. But it's like, believe me or don't believe me. I'm not going to go out there and play a game of propaganda and try to expose the fact that it's the Americans or that it's NATO or that it's CIA, because ultimately you can't win a propaganda war against America. Now, that's an interesting take. And he made a little wink to Tucker and he said, you understand this. You understand that America's media are controlled by the elite, and there's no amount of money you can invest to go after them, to go counter to their narrative, because ultimately that money is a waste. You end up peddling in against a bigger wave than yours. And so that was an interesting insight, because Vladimir Putin is often presented as trying to seed division in the West, and I've never really seen this. Like, when they do these anti-Russian bot operations on the internet, they catch a handful of bots, and it's not even clear that they were Russian. And you're like, okay, did we arrest our own people? And because it's always a bunch of semi-Russian, semi-American people who were in America. It's never really a central operation of bots launched truly from Russia. And one wonders if there is any desire for Russia to be controlling the Western mind. And Putin here displays a fully relaxed position. And he says, you know, I'm not interested in winning a propaganda war, because anyways, any money I put in there, there's going to be $1 billion coming from America's elite to make sure that my propaganda is undercut by the much greater propaganda on your side. So it's a very interesting perspective to see a Putin not interested in convincing people and saying, ultimately, those are not the kind of wars I'm interested at winning. And ultimately, the one war that he's interested at winning is the war for allying again the Orthodox Russian-speaking people under a single flag. Now, it's a federalist speech, and there's much anti-Nazi speech in his discourse, because they have a whole narrative that they are going after the Nazi mentality, and Zelensky has sided with the Nazis. I think it's a myth. It's a mythology, not mythology in the sense of being false, but mythology in the sense that it's a story. It's a lens you can put on yourself if you want to present the Russian side as heroic. But those lenses are very often, they're tools of the mind to create a historical context. That's fine, but it's not my view. I don't think that the question of Nazis is particularly, relevant to this whole thing. Yes, the Nazis have shown early, and it was I was laughing my ass off when we heard Facebook was allowing pro-Nazi speech as long as it's pro-Ukrainian Nazis. that was a funny moment, but other than this, I see it as a war between an extending American empire and a very restrained Russian empire, really. And this is what comes out of this interview as a whole for the whole 2 hours is a super relaxed Putin. And Tucker Carlson, I would say the strongest he tried to press was probably on, well, you know, how do you reconcile being a Christian and having to kill people? And he didn't go with the whole Putin is a murderer kind of stuff that you would hear from the left. He went with, you know, all leaders, whether it's the West or Russia, end up making decisions that end up killing people. How do you reconcile being a Christian and the Bible says, turn the other cheek and don't kill? How do you reconcile being a leader with having to make decisions that lead to death? And Putin answered, it's very easy. It's about self-defense. And so in his view, it is not forbidden by the Bible to self-defend against aggression. And he considers that what has been going on since 2014 in Ukraine is an aggression against the Russian people. Alimer says he has to say that about Nazis. You don't, however, see Moscow turning into a multi-ethnic shithole. Moscow isn't, but the Russian Empire is a multi-ethnic shithole that is inclusive of a lot of Muslim population. We'll see where that goes. I mean, they certainly don't have the African expansion right now that of the demographics that we see in Europe and that we've seen historically in America. But it is a multi-ethnic empire of its own type. Richard Spencer was asking, why is Tucker Carlson even in the room? That's an interesting take on the interview, that Tucker Carlson would have kind of failed at guiding the interview, at pushing maybe on Putin, at bringing it in directions. Sometimes it's what you have to do as an interviewer. So I don't see it as bad at all what Tucker did. Sometimes as an interviewer, you have to decide to let it go because you are in front of a structured speech and any attempt. In fact, if anything, I was annoyed at the attempts of Tucker Carlson to say, during the first 30 minutes, he was fighting back against the direction of Putin. And he was like, I want to bring it back to how is that relevant to the current Ukraine war? And Putin had kind of trapped him into his direction because he had started with an insult toward Tucker. On his first question, he said, wait a minute, is that a comedy show or is that a serious interview? And Tucker had to say, of course, it's a serious interview. And then Putin was using this as, okay, well, if you're going to tell me it's a serious interview, let's be serious here. I'm going to take you through the history. So Putin bought himself a ticket of a free stream of thought for 30 minutes because that's what he cut Tucker Carlson in a catch 22. Tucker Carlson cannot answer, well, it's a comedy show. And so being serious, Vladimir Putin took the serious approach. And he told him, I know that you've studied history, so you're going to like this. Very interesting strategy. I disagree with Richard Spencer that the absence of Tucker Carlson is to be critiqued there. There was no question of good faith that could be asked that would have driven the interview into a more confrontational direction. There's a host of bad faith questions that could be asked if Tucker Carlson was at the service of the regular mediatic elite of the US and Europe. But this would only create friction. It would put Putin on the defensive mode. And ultimately, Tucker couldn't stand behind the legitimacy of these questions. You know, a mainstream media person will bring talking points that come loaded with the pro-Ukrainian belief. But you coming at Putin with that kind of question, the kind of question that make it into an American show these days, he would undermine them. He would present you the alternative Russian view of the question, and you would realize that this whole support of Ukraine is basically it's an item of faith that our journalists are taking. They live with a cognition that seeks to always justify the Ukrainian side of this whole conflict. So all in all, excellent interview, a historical moment, and I was happy to be here on the internet today to be catching it as it was released. I watched it in 2x speed so that I could be prepared to comment on it on this show. Frederick von Finkel says, Putin is literally overseeing the extermination of Russians and pretends to be a Nazi fighting hero. I don't see that the Russian people is being exterminated. And let's not forget that the forced involvement of males on the Ukrainian territory, which does result in some Russians being on the front line, the forced participation to this military operation is the fault of Zelensky and is martial law. It is the decision of the Ukrainian side. So I'm not going to put it on Putin that he's being sent cannon fodder that he needs to deal with. And Putin has explained, in fact, an example in the interview that totally addresses your point. He says they don't want to be taken prisoner. He says there was a squad of Russians. Now, it's hard to know whether that's true or whether that's a story, but at least Putin told the story of a squad of Russians. They had totally encircled the other side. And they said, come out and we won't shoot you. We'll take you prisoners. And they heard speaking in Russian on the Ukrainian side. They were speaking Russian and they were telling each other, don't give up, don't surrender. And so they had to kill them. That's a heartbreaking case of Russians having to kill Russians. But the other Russians, first, they were given an option, according to the story. They were given an option to be prisoners. And secondly, I mean, they would have been Russians in Russia. They would have been where they belong much more than under the martial regime of Zelensky, in my view. That's my view, but I understand that sometimes when you're in the military, there's this whole, I don't want to be a prisoner of war, I'm going to die honorably. There's no honor in death in that case, in my view. We have the Canadian debate around children and puberty blockers. Billboard Chris was celebrating that Canadian conservative leader Pierre Poilievre has finally stated that children should not be given puberty blockers. Let's see what he had to say.
Do you support age restrictions for puberty blockers and hormone therapies for trans kids?
I think that Justin Trudeau is trying to divide and distract Canadians by spreading disinformation about the decisions that premiers and parents are making.
What do you think? I want to know your position. What is your own party policy?
It's your own party policy. At party convention.
I think we should protect the rights of parents to make their own decisions.
What does it mean?
With regards to their children. And I believe that adults should have the freedom to make any decision they want about their bodies.
But minors, and medical interventions for minors, as your own party members suggested.
Medical interventions like what?
That is the language that your party.
What medical interventions?
Well, you would have to ask your party members.
What medical interventions?
Such as puberty blockers and hormone replacement.
For minors?
Yeah. Yes.
Irreversible? You're talking about irreversible.
I just want to be clear.
For minors.
Puberty blockers for minors?
Yes.
Do you agree with that?
I think that we should protect children and their ability to make adult decisions when they are adults.
So you think only adults should make...
Oh, that's a twisted... I was expecting a little more decisive positioning here. Anand says it's still pretty lefty. Yeah, it is pretty lefty. I mean, this is not clear. He's saying, okay, you have to derive what he's saying. He's saying, I support us protecting the children's ability to make decisions once they are adult. So it's kind of a coded way to say, well, if the hormone blocker has permanent effects, permanent consequences, then it will restrict their adult liberty to choose away from the sex that they have chosen. So he is against puberty blockers for children, according to this reflection, but you have to pull it from him.
Oh, you said yes? Just to be clear, you said yes, only adults should take puberty blockers?
I think we should protect children. Let them make adult decisions when they become adults.
So that,
so you do support age restrictions.
So that means you are against puberty blockers for kids under the age of 18. Is that
yes.
Unclear? Okay. What about, can I?
Okay, finally we get it.
Ask you about in Alberta.
By the way, I just want to make another comment on this. Justin Trudeau is again puffing out his chest, trying to divide Canadians and attack parents who are trying to protect their kids. He will, in the end, back down on this, just like he had to back down on his firearms policy, just like he had to back down on bringing in medical assistance and dying for people suffering from mental illness. Just like he's backing down again and again and again, he will back down on this because he is not interested in protecting kids. He's interested in using this as a divisive wedge to distract from doubling housing costs.
That is correct. Justin Trudeau, again and again, we see him flip-flopping, changing his view according to the whims of the left, and you realize he's just a guy looking for a cause.
Prime Minister, on pharmacare legislation, how is
that
going?
Trans kids are 5 times more likely in this country to attempt suicide.
They keep bringing up the suicide rate. Do you have a solution for it? Because the suicide rate seems to be pretty high across the board, whether you've given them hormones, you've not given them hormones, you've done the bottom surgery, you've not done the bottom surgery. So can we get either a solution or you stop talking about it? Because we won't let our political and moral systems be extorted by threats of death.
Well, Mr. Poilievre, Ms. Smith are proposing is to take away the rights of parents and their kids to make the right choices for them with their doctors. We don't think government should be doing that. Our government will always stand up for the most vulnerable, including our trans youth.
So Justin Trudeau trying to make a cause out of it. Who elected him, says Saturn Shines. Who elected him? I'll tell you who elected him. A bunch of boomers. Bunch of ridiculous Canadian boomers. Bitcoin Archives reports Fidelity now allocates 1% to spot Bitcoin in their all-in-one conservative ETF. They will all do it. Look at this. This is important because this is the asset distribution of Fidelity. We offer a all-in-one conservative ETF. So it's for the person who, I don't want to think about investment. I don't want to think where my money is. I just want you to spread that money into a bunch of assets that you feel are conservative and that will preserve the value of my money. Now, suddenly, cryptocurrencies, the Bitcoin ETF is making it 1% into this basket. Now that is massive. I think that one day it will be 10, 20%. But for now it's 1%. And this is like boomer funds where they're like, put that money into whatever is good. Now it's 1% Bitcoin. Next year it might be 10% Bitcoin, but that's more Bitcoin being bought. And that's why the price is rising again, even if we were in an overexcited pre-halving bull run, a mini bull run before the big bull run. The price keeps rising. It's unstoppable. There is nothing that can stop Bitcoin. We are headed towards such highs. It's going to be spectacular. Go Away says, if JF is going to talk about crypto, I'm going to go back to the Tucker Putin interview. Well, if you keep talking about the Putin interview, I'm going to go back to blocking you, Go Away, as I've often done. John Lefebvre, and talking about the Putin interview and the Ukraine situation, it's heartbreaking what's happening in the Ukraine right now because they've got all of their basic soldiers killed. And now they're at the point of scratching the bottom of the drawers in Ukrainian society. All of these males who have been underrun, who have been refusing to enroll themselves as they are obligated to do by law. And so right now in Ukraine, what it looks like is you have a bunch of expert kidnappers who are catching the last males remaining of Ukrainian society to send them dying at the front. They don't want to be part of the war. They don't want to be killed for nothing. They know they're getting killed for nothing. But boom, you get to the front. We're going to give you a gun. You're not going to get any massive military advance from an army filled with this. Because these guys, I mean, if they don't die from the first bullet that's ever headed their way, they're going to just raise their hand and try to get captured as prisoners on the Russian side. But you're not going to get a victory militarily if you scratch the bottom of the drawers. This is where this whole Ukraine war, in the way it's handled by the Zelensky side, looks more like a male-targeted genocide of the Ukrainian people. And that is so sad. Frederick von Finkel says, coming to a town near you. Yeah, we're not above this in Western civilization. You know, the generation of my grandfather has seen forced conscription. And one day it might be back. Elon Musk says X is now the number one most downloaded app of any kind. Absolutely beautiful. And this is even before the Tucker interview. With the Tucker interview, I expect that X will be seating itself as hyper dominant, as the only media in town. And perhaps it will bring back some leftists who refuse to buy the blue check mark or the golden check mark for the corporations. And then says, clearing it for the Jewish mafia to take it back over. This would be so heartbreaking if it ends up that, yes, this was all a genocide of males so that we can have migrating Jewish males headed to Russia, to Ukraine. That would be the most disgusting thing, but it's still a plan that's on my mind. It's still a possibility as far as I'm concerned. The fantastic conclusion of the special counsel that investigated Biden, because you'll remember that we have prosecuted Trump because he had classified documents. And, oh my God, you have classified documents in your home. That's dangerous. And so because they want to find any crime they can against Trump, they went after him. But then we had, some journalists eventually found out, Biden has the same. Biden has classified documents at his home too. So just to say that they were being equal and fair, they went after Biden by naming a special prosecutor, this guy. Now, I cannot believe the conclusion of this guy. This guy's conclusion is, I cannot sue Biden because he's an old, frail, old man who barely remembers dates and who barely understands where he is. He is incapable. He is incapable of having committed a crime because he has no fucking clue what boxes are, what they contain. This guy, the special prosecutor, noted that President Biden couldn't even remember dates, like the times he was a vice president, the time he was elected president. And he says, this guy has not a functioning brain. There is no way I can prosecute him. But as Zero Hedge titles it, it was someone, it's not Zero Hedge, but it was someone on Twitter that was saying, Joe Biden is incapable of undergoing trial, too senile, but he's okayed for presidency. Somehow we have the case of a president who is too senile to have committed a crime, but is okay for continuing being the leader of the free world. Dino Rogovich says, diminished responsibility, but he is perfectly okay to be president. Look, it's one of the tricks. We've talked about this, how the criteria of intent is very often used by leftists to justify double standards. So here we have, oh, well, Biden is incapable of intent. He's too old. But Trump is okay. Now, you guys were the ones throughout the Trump presidency saying Trump is a maniac, Trump is unhinged, Trump is irrational, Trump is incapable of thinking. But somehow he's capable of committing crimes. And you guys are going after him for whatever. Now, Joe Biden, on the other side, no one on the left dares to criticize his mental health. But here, when it comes to the point where we have to save him for something, they are willing to acknowledge that he has low mental capabilities. The leftists do the same with intent and genocide. So somehow, Hamas, what they did on October 7th, is a genocide against Jews. But what Jews do to Hamas and to Palestinian civilians since October 7th, that's not a genocide because it's not intentional. The intent wasn't to destroy Gaza. They just happened to destroy Gaza. We didn't intend it, sorry. We have to do a complete rethink of the intent concept and the mens rea concept as gating findings of guilt, both in international geopolitics and in judicial cases, because at this point it's being used by powers in an arbitrary fashion. The eighth wonder of the world says, I'm buying you a Borsalino hat, Jeff. I don't want any hat. I do have to cut my hair because my hair is getting pretty long. But I don't want any hat. I'm pretty fine like this. Aquanote says, Puzzy with the purpose of a system is what it does should be the only standard for a justice system. It's what we have to be added to. I understand the role of mens rea is important. It used to be to protect someone who really, like, let's say you're driving a car and you end up killing someone. It's not a murder, but then mens rea came in and it became a justification for capturing all sorts of murders from mentally ill people and kind of remove responsibility from them. But we've reached a point where we are questioning the law at this point. We've reached a point where using this mens rea excuse is a trick of power. We had a super chat by Low Mercury Tuna on Entropy. By the way, if you'd like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat. Odyssey super chats are my favorite way to receive support for the show. Alternatively, use Entropy. The link to Entropy is in the description below. Low Mercury Tuna was saying, when you will be in Rome, will you do as the Romans do? Will you IRL stream in the USA at least once as a joke for a unique legendary episode? We will all claim as I was there for that one. Certainly, since I'll be gone in April for about 3 weeks, I don't know exactly how much time, but about 3 weeks. Since I'll be gone for a lot of time, I want to find a solution to stay in contact with you guys. But it probably won't be through Odyssey streams. I want to find a solution where maybe I'll be with just my phone and I'll be talking to the phone. Maybe I'll be outside. Maybe I'll be laying on a chair. Maybe I'll be in my bed like people people like Mike Cernovich sometimes are laying in the bed and streaming on Twitter. So it will not be the regular show with its regular quality, but I want to find a way to connect, maybe not every day, but so that during my trip, I can at least connect with you guys once in a while, maybe once, twice a week. I don't know. I'll try to set up something like this. It will be dependent on circumstances and my access to internet. But I also will have an internet connection with some data, I guess. So we'll see how it goes there. Frog Eyes says, U.S. Border Guard, state the nature of your visit, JF. JF, insemination. The insemination will not necessarily happen within the U.S., but... you know, it's never bad to give it a second shot. James O'Keefe says, breaking, O'Keefe Media Group infiltrates secret converted illegal immigrant compound, Casa Alitas. It's an hilarious... Once again, it's James O'Keefe. Look at him. James O'Keefe. Posing as, what, some sort of immigrant, homeless. He has his Marlboro cigarettes, a bottle of alcohol in a bag.
I don't know why they're asking me.
Here, I'm an established citizen.
Standing in front of the Ramada and Tucson Airport, a police officer told us to mind our own business.
What is this, a migrant place? What is it?
None of your business. Get going.
We see migrants, illegal immigrants, standing near the rooms and told us not to go in.
What is this business over here?
It doesn't matter. Gotta go because the Pima County is coming with the sheriff.
Get out of here.
What? We're going in anyway.
They're supposed to have a sponsor. That means that they lied to be here in the first place. And that's what will get them in trouble.
We wanted to talk to someone about resources.
We put a hidden camera on a Mexican illegal immigrant whistleblower. Caesar also saw a sign for Las Palmas.
Quieren cobrar dinero por nosotros al gobierno.
Many subcontractors, many money grabs that get paid no matter what.
Listo para hacer bebés americanos. Pero has notado que con mucha gente que se viene también son como.
So, very interesting investigation from within the migrant networks, and it's like they have a building. This is not illegal migration in the way I would imagine it. Like, I would imagine people living under bridges, trying to make it through, trying to survive. But it's like, no, they have beds. They have a whole setup. They have people getting paid to host these beds in these buildings. And you even have these agents pushing away people like James O'Keefe and saying, don't ask any question. It's not your business. So we have a whole industry developing around hosting illegal migrants, managing them, helping them continue their road into America. Jan Malz Chong was quoting Flamenco TV. The big news of today, other than the Tucker interview, of course. Leftist YouTube political streamer Vouch accidentally leaked a portion of his smut folder while live streaming, and it's full of illustrated horse-related bestiality and lolicon pedophilia. Fate loves irony but hates hypocrisy. And the guy who made the edit to help us review what the content of the porn folder of Vouch is, he started with an old statement of Vouch on what is there to say about the people who consume that kind of porn. Hear Vouch here, and I will not be able to show the porn on screen, but just hear what Vouch has to say about the people who consume this kind of porn.
What is it about anime that attracts Nazis? In this case, it's literally the pedophilia angle. It's that anime has a ton of f***ing lolly shit, and a ton of Nazis are hyper insecure in their masculinity, and they want like a trad wife, or whatever, untainted by feminism, that they can control and manipulate because they have no other experiences.
So, the whole psychologization of the Nazi. People like me are being victimized because there are degenerate pedos like Vaush out there overthinking their own pedo desires into our minds. So somehow, and when he says Nazis, he's talking, among others, he's talking about me because he's called me a Nazi many times. So when he uses Nazis, he thinks about me among other people. So according to the Vaush reflection, I would be a Nazi, and because I want a trad wife, and I want that trad wife to be isolated from feminism, is right up to there. That is correct, Vaush. Where he isn't correct is when he reaches the conclusion that therefore I'm gonna go watch lolicon porn, that is porn of cartoonish Japanese style, very young, kind of kid-like, childish representations of girls, often engaged in super hardcore sex. And because my desire to get a trad woman would be so hurt by the modern world filled with feminism, I would retreat to the virtual world and go watch lolicon porn. Now, the second part of this reflection is a Freudian projection, because that's not what I do. That's not what a right-winger... Right-wingers aren't like, oh my God, I'm so disappointed. I can't find a traditional trad wife. I'm going to go check out Japanese porn on the internet. That's not how it works. However, it's how it works in Vaush's mind. And now we are allowed, knowing what has been exposed, and I can't show it on screen. Vaush yesterday was streaming. He tried saving a PNG, and he tried saving a PNG of a male suit. He was just talking about male suits, and there was nothing porno about what he was doing. But as he clicked, right-click, save as, what opened is a document, a folder of his own desktop computer called To Be Sorted in capital letter. Is OneDrive desktop. See, I always imagined that the leftist would leave the OneDrive installation on, and they do. He's in OneDrive, this fucking retard. Now, I will describe what is present in this folder. There is a first folder that's called old, and old, we don't know what's in it. There's a second folder called taxes, in which there appears to be a bunch of PNGs and JPEGs related to Vaush's actual identity. It seems that he has a scan of his driver's license in there. And then right beside taxes, in the to be sorted item, he has XXX GIFs. And this seems to be pictures of real porn woman. Then he has XXX pics, and those seems to be Japanese anime porn of the kind that he was describing as indicative of a frustration Nazi pedo mind. And then he has XXX vids, which clearly contains videos of anime porn of extremely young, childish representations. Then there's four. It's not clear if these four pictures are porn. Maybe it's Zelda pictures, but maybe it's Zelda porn. Zelda themed porn. Then there's a picture called More Hands-On Approach, which appears to be maybe anti anime porn of submissive female. Then there is an extremely young, childish representation in anime of a girl in underwear and bras. Then there is some more. There is Japanese porn again. Then there is Japanese skirt porn. Then there is Japanese badminton porn. And now we enter the truly dark part of Vouch's life. Horse, sorapoi, hentai, porn, in which a horse is with his dick penetrating a female laying on a table in her ass. And it appears that on the second image, the horse sperm is getting collected by this female in a kind of bucket of horse sperm. I don't know what she intends to do with this. Again, sorapoi type Japanese hentai illustrations. Then there is a transracial half horse, half male, maybe creature of sex. Then there is sorapoi porn of a young female touching the dick of the horse. More horse porn, sorapoi hardcore anal porn, sorapoi hardcore anal porn, and then sorapoi hentai, trans creature, half human, half furry, dick licking. So that is it for my description of the Vouch folder. That is the information. So you can say that you know what was in the Vouch porn folder without having looked at it. I have looked at the evidence. I can guarantee the accuracy of my reporting. Now, this is the guy that goes around claiming that I'm messed up in the head. You know, this is the guy that goes around presenting me as an evil man. As an evil man. This guy is literally consuming, and he's consuming that type of horse porn, bestiality, Japanese child kind of stuff, pedo stuff, really. That what I saw here is not pedo in the sense that they were not pictures of children, but they are porn images that reproduce certain aspect of youth in their stylings. So this guy is going out there claiming that I have a dirty mind, but yet if you had access to my computer, all you would find is I'm just the genuine artist that I always present to be. I don't consume porn. You would find collections of games and old games and stuff and videos, and that's it. No porn. Well, Vouch, what a sick fuck this guy is. And I don't know, he has not commented publicly since this was exposed, his porn folder. But I think he has some introspection to do, given that he was clearly saying that the consumption of such porn is basically an indirect pedo thing. But it would seem that Vouch is a pedo who uses porn to kind of go at the edge of the permitted. Go away, says JF, keeps his porn stored in his mind where it is safe from the government. Exactly. I mean, there is no greater pleasure than imagining having sex with a woman that you love. Generate the porn in your mind. That is perfectly fine. There is nothing wrong with it. And yes, you are protected from accidental leaks, government intervention. Apparently, some of the images people are reporting that it's literally from Dota 2. So basically the kind of games that I play on the computer, Valsh is making porn. The Sorapoy artist has inspired himself for this female character from the Dota 2 game. That was my impression, because I was recognizing the character as, hey, this is the Dota 2 fairy. I don't like this character in Dota 2, but she's a fairy and she does some magic stuff. But yeah, in this case, they have made her into a porn cartoon character. Well, 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 what do we learn? People were asking me to comment on those people who say, and I've commented on this before, those people who say that parenting doesn't matter. You will hear this from the Steven Pinker of this world. You will hear this from many so supposedly educated psychologists. And very often it will present, they will present themselves as, oh, we're right, because we're saying it's all about the genes. And many people get fooled by this, but it's a very subversive discourse. To be saying it's all about the genes, it's not about the parenting. You have to ask yourself, do we even have an experiment that would allow to separate what is the effect of the gene, what is the effect of the parenting? We don't. Because in the very vast majority of cases of society, people have their biological children, and they are parenting their own genes. So in most situations of society, we don't have the experimental division between, oh, is it the gene here or is it the parenting? Well, it's both, always, almost. Because there's very few cases of adoption, and even the cases of adoption, then the question still remains, is it the gene of the adoptive parent or is it the parent? So really someone who comes at you with, oh, Jeff, it's all about genes, it's not about parenting, you have to ask yourself first, is there a dichotomy here? Because you talk of these two things as separate. Is parenting separate of genes? No, it is not. I could have genes that make me a tempered parent, an authoritarian parent, an angry parent, an idiotic parent. So there is no separation between genes and parenting. Genes cause parenting. Parenting is farming genes into the world, is favoring certain of your children over others, potentially, and changing the direction of evolution in the world. So I said, and I blocked the person because the person replied, you don't know about behavioral genetics. And I was like, okay, this is such a stupid reply. I'm blocking you. I'm Papa JF. I do know about genetics, as it turns out. The conclusion that parents don't matter is ridiculous. It has been drawn from decades of poor research in psychology and poor interpretation of that research. The first thing one needs to ask is, do I have a methodology allowing me to capture parental effects? We don't. The studies reaching that conclusion are simply unable to capture the effect of parenting for one or many of the following reasons. One, studies focusing on self-reported parenting style. For example, people will tell you, I'm an authoritarian parent. There is no demonstration that the parenting style category, especially but not limited to when it is self-identified, captures the complexity of the contribution of parents to children outcomes. In addition, we simply don't have good measures of outcomes. Studies will look for job in adulthood, mental health problems, etc. What I see around me is that parents will, for example, highly influence the degree of politeness and how well and aggressive their children will interact with others. And this poorly gets captured by big categories established by psychologists. Two, these studies often fail to look into what truly matters: evolutionary fitness, numbers of babies produced on the next generation. This variable is absent in almost all psychology studies. You can't reach proper conclusions if you're not even measuring what matters most in the end. 3. Twin studies and claims that genetics is all that matters. The problem with twin studies is that they have one gigantic blind spot. In technical terms, we could call it the nonlinear harmonic effect of parent-to-child gene resemblance. In simpler terms, it's very likely that the genes that make you a good parent make you a good one for your kind of children. For some other children, the perfect parent is probably bearing some other parental genes. That is, in a particular group of humanity, the parents have probably evolved genes for parental behavior that are appropriate for children of that group, but that could be disadvantageous to children of other groups. Imagine you are a white parent raising your black child, raising the black child of your wife's boyfriend. And imagine you teach him pacifism and you teach him turn the other cheek. And now your black child goes into the hood and then he turns the other cheek and he's pacifist. He's going to end up dead. You've been a bad parent for your child because you've not prepared him for the hood. But see, you were a white parent to a black child. That is the problem. How much of this phenomenon do twin studies capture? Absolutely zero. Because twin studies start with either separation at birth, or for those who are within family, then the important variable, which is correlation between parent and children's genes, isn't varying. It's held constant. In both cases, twin studies are absolutely experimentally blind as far as distinguishing parental effects from genetic ones for the quality of parental behaviors on children's outcomes. 4, the fact that we are already in a society which strongly attends to children through state services blurs the image of the actual contribution of parents in all possible ecological niches. Most psychology studies are run in modern times and in societies with heavy intervention toward children by the state. This fact blurs the image of the actual value of parents in future situations, where the state's apparatus for artificial inflation of children's capacities becomes invalid, corrupt, or inexistent, as is the case right now. For these 4 reasons, never trust a psychology professor telling you that parenting doesn't matter. They're really just reaching the conclusions they must reach to encourage you to abandon your children to them. And they get away with the money whether they do a good job or not. It's too bad that the person I was basing this post on, I had to block her, but she was so loose in her reply and so sarcastic, and her reply was so not addressing my points that I was like, it's worthless for me to continue interacting with her. Stefan Moliner, this is a summary of Stefan Moliner by ChatGPT. Someone posted this on our Discord. ChatGPT is summarizing a recent Moliner video saying, based on the transcript, men pay for dates as a way to display generosity and to test for reciprocity in a romantic relationship. The act of paying for a date allows a man to show that he is willing and able to provide value and happiness to the woman. It also serves as a test to see if the woman appreciates this generosity and is interested in reciprocating in her own ways, thereby indicating a potential for a balanced and reciprocal relationship. That's a very interesting view, I would agree. I think it's a very powerful explanation that ultimately the asymmetry, the fact that men always pay, and in fact, this asymmetry is kind of weird in a society that claims that women have been liberated and they have jobs. Like, if they have jobs that they're making money, why wouldn't they be paying equally? But from that perspective, it makes sense because you are investing a little amount to kind of have skin in the game. But ultimately, you're expecting, like, she better be passionate, you know? She better show interest in me because then I don't care about having lost $10. But at least I have measured something useful to me, which is this woman is not interested in me. A very interesting perspective. Massive short squeeze sends small caps soaring. And we've seen Bitcoin also soaring today. I believe it's up, up, up. We are getting up. Now, there is still the possibility of a recession. We are definitely due to a recession. But this article says, irony alert. Outlawing the recession has made a monster recession inevitable. I think it's kind of what's happening. The recessions have been extremely soft for many decades now. In fact, people who are alive today of my generation, they have not really experienced a massive true recession. We'll hear of the 2008 financial crisis, but the fact is it was... If you were not directly involved in it through some messing up of your mortgage, it was pretty easy to handle. But I think, we are due for a massive recession, but a recession cannot happen while we are in a Bitcoin bull run. A Bitcoin bull run is expansionary in and of itself on the money supply. So because people, they want to get their... They want to get money off their shoulders. They want to get rid of their USD. They want to jump into Bitcoin and into the stock market. So I don't see us... This recession is definitely due, but I don't see us entering in it in some solid way as long as the bull run hasn't run its course. We have a major shakeup on the Ukraine side. Zelensky fires top general, appoints a new commander. You can rotate all you want. There's no winning this war. And that's a point that Elon Musk has done. Vladimir Putin has done. He's made the point that for some reason, people thought they could beat Russia on the ground. They can't. And that is very correct. Finally, as the last news item for today, involuntary celibate, that's a great account. It's a great account of pathetic behavior. I love following him, involuntary celibate. I hear that he's a black guy, that he's a very fat black guy. I don't have confirmation that he's very fat, but reading what he says, I'm too ugly for a woman to even accept talking to me. And I know that he's black. This is probably a very fat black guy who cannot get a single woman around him. He's constantly mocking the people who give advice on Twitter, and we say, you know, it's about the attitude. He's like, no, you don't know that it's about the attitude. I know because I'm so ugly that no matter what attitude I display, I always fail with women. So he says, are these average men with attractive women in the room with us right now? He says, there's no such thing as... average men that end up scoring women because of their attitude or because... No. He experiences himself being at the bottom of the sexual ladder, and he says he has totally given up. He spends his days on Twitter telling people, stop telling me to be more positive about my situation. I will lose. There's nothing positive about my situation. There will never be a woman interested in me. and he says, as a joke against the people who are trying to cheer him up, he says, I guess the first 10,000 rejections are just warm up. I mean, you do have to go through a lot of women before you will find a decent one. I am so happy that late in my life like this, I have found a super woman in my girlfriend. But it wasn't on my in my hope. It wasn't on my radar anymore. I had personally given up. But yeah, you do have to go through a lot of women before you'll find one that's interested, and then that she will be decent. It is a lot of rotation, and it's a pain in the ass. But it's the pain in the ass that was imposed on us by birth in the wrong times. That is it for tonight, boys. Much love. Go watch the Tucker Putin interview. It's worth it. And it's relaxed. It's calm. It's historical. Thank you.